Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to New Cyber Frontier. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Tisby-Kuzar, and we have a special guest today, Mr. Nate Lesser, CEO of Cypiot Black. And we will start with having him introduce himself and give us a little bit about his background and his company.
Sure, thanks for having me. So I work with a group of dedicated cybersecurity professionals to develop a platform for protecting executives in their personal lives. And the company is called Cypiot Black. And we work with executives and other high-value targets to ensure that they and their family members are protected from cyber attack.
Okay. In your implementation of cyber executive protection of high net worth individuals of interest to hackers, can you tell us why they would need this level of protection?
Sure. So when we look across the industry, we've seen in the enterprise trends that favor highly sophisticated but diffuse attacks. So we're looking often as the enterprise does a better job of protecting itself, of providing stronger protections, costing significant amounts of money, and building larger and larger security teams in order to keep those protections up and running. The enterprise looks like a hard target. And attackers, like the rest of us, want to maximize the time they spend and increase the value for the time they spend. So they're looking for soft targets. In the enterprise, we see, as I said, highly sophisticated attacks, but that are kind of agnostic as to which enterprise they compromise. So we often see the first point of entry being a phishing campaign that is widespread and will go to employees across an entire organization or many, many organizations at the same time, but not highly targeted. It will include, however, a payload that is incredibly sophisticated, that includes one or multiple zero-day exploits that will trace these campaigns where, as a security community, we're seeing the initial exploit, then a pivot to a different command and control channel, the increase of security privileges within a network and lateral movement across the network, and finally, the identification and exfiltration of some piece of sensitive data. However, on the personal side, we see the inverse. We see attackers focus on highly targeted attacks that are often using commodity exploits. So not very technically sophisticated, but highly targeted, as opposed to a phishing campaign that doesn't really care who its target is. Attackers will do a lot of research about their target. They'll get to know the high-value target that they're interested in. They will dig deep into that individual's life and the life of his or her family members. But then they'll either send a phishing email, or they will do some war driving, or exploit a known vulnerability in a commonly used website by one of those individuals or some other entry point, and pivot into their personal life using highly commoditized attack packages that they can download off the internet and quite literally come with 24/7 customer support. So we're seeing a very different profile of an attacker in the personal life and the personal attacks versus the type of attack that we see in the enterprise.
Okay. Can you share with us why companies that have executives of the status would not provide this kind of protection?
Well, that's a great question. So we often think about protecting the enterprise, and from the job of the CISO, we think about it in terms of devices, networks, systems, data, and people. Those are the things that a chief information security officer and his or her team are responsible for protecting. When you try to expand coverage to look outside of the enterprise itself, enterprise assets, things that even include, you know, maybe cloud services, or, you know, we often refer to this notion that the perimeter of the enterprise is dead. It doesn't extend to the personal lives of their executives and high value targets, despite the fact that there's a real crossover impact. And we refer to that crossover impact as entanglement, the notion that the enterprise is entangled with the personal lives of its executives. But when you think about it, if I'm a chief information security officer for a large enterprise, I might be spending $100 million a year on cybersecurity. You ask a perfectly reasonable question. Why doesn't my team provide coverage for our executives in their home, on their home networks, their personal devices, their kids' devices, their online accounts, worry about their identity and reputation? And the answer is, of course, privacy. That's the at least the first answer. Executives, even though they often, you know, own a significant percentage of the company, even though they often are the people who make decisions within the company, they still don't want the company poking around in their personal lives at that deep a level.
Nathan, I find these personal, highly targeted research performed on executives quite interesting. However, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we're going to return and continue.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Well, we're back, Nathan, and we want to pick up where we left off. And the last question you were addressing is, you know, why companies would not provide this kind of coverage for these high-profile executives, which you did a really good job of explaining. Next, I would like to...
Yeah, so separate from the executive... I'm sorry, I go ahead.
No, you go right ahead.
I was just going to say, separate from the privacy concerns of the individual executives, there's also the concern of the company. We hear from general counsels pretty regularly that they want no part of having the home network logs of any of their executives inside the corporate enterprise, where they may be discoverable. They could be come under certain regulatory regimes that the company is required to disclose. So you have both sides of that. And we've been encouraging companies to, rather than say, we can't do something about the personal lives of our executives for all of the reasons we just laid out, to say, we can't do it with our own security team, but we can certainly hire an outside vendor. We can hire an outside entity to provide that protection the same way that companies do for healthcare. And we think that the long-term view here is companies will be required to provide cybersecurity protection for their executives the same way they provide other benefits in order to hire and retain the best people.
Okay. Tell me... in your practice of cybersecurity with executives, what do you see as the biggest industry problem?
So I think what we're seeing is a nascent field within cyber executive protection. It's still not well understood or broadly adopted. And while we might like to see that becoming a major industry trend, it's still somewhat new. I would say there is probably too much of a focus, if we're looking at industry trends writ large, on the most exciting, coolest, latest, greatest thing. I mean, we tend to do that as cybersecurity professionals and engineers and policymakers. We tend to look and say, get excited about the latest cutting edge technology tools and capabilities and development. So we'll talk at great length about homomorphic encryption. And there are companies now that are providing specialized cybersecurity services for space, for communication between satellites. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, the thing that has the greatest impact on our reduction of risk and risk management is much more of the day-to-day blocking and tackling. Mm-hmm. What often gets referred to, and I kind of hate this term, but I haven't found a better one, is cyber hygiene. The things that truly everyone needs to be doing and that we focus on often not nearly enough as a community. The other sort of trend that I feel is really important to talk about, and I usually get on a soapbox about this one, mm-hmm. Is that as a community, we've done a real disservice to individuals. We spend all of our time and energy and money and vast resources working to protect the enterprise. But when someone says, so what about my personal life? We basically say you're on your own. You say, here's a top 10 of things you should be doing. You should be using password managers and two-factor authentication everywhere. You should be backing your systems up and patching everything. You should be running a firewall. You should be, you know, managing the threats on your network. Mm-hmm. We expect people to do that for themselves, which is a really unrealistic expectation. We're the only field where we say there's specialized expertise necessary in order to be a cybersecurity professional and then turn around and expect everybody to be good at it. That's something that I think we need to do a better job at, and I think as a community we have to find better ways to protect individuals.
Okay. Thank you for responding to that question. That's quite interesting. What do you consider the largest concerns or risks to companies or the cyber industry in general?
So I think, you know, the largest risk is a hard thing to answer. One of the things we know about risk management is that it is just that. It's a management activity, right? So it depends very much on the profile of the organization, the types of threats it faces, mm-hmm. the types of assets it's looking to protect. I would say that the thing to realize, you know, this isn't exactly the greatest risk, but the most significant activity that any organization can undertake, whether it's an individual or an enterprise, is thinking about cybersecurity as another type of risk. So you'll hear this from a lot of people. How do I connect cyber risk to business risk? Mm-hmm. I think that's the true core of improving your defensibility, mm-hmm. improving the reliability of your systems, improving the increase in confidentiality, integrity, and availability of your digital assets. You have to think about it in terms of the risk management exercise. Mm-hmm. And as a result, be able to articulate that risk in terms of business losses. So when you go into the boardroom as a CISO and say, here's why we need to invest in this new technology, mm-hmm. or here's why we have to transition, despite the fact that it creates some additional friction, we have to move everybody to two-factor authentication for all accounts in our network. You can say that and no one will listen to you. And you can walk in and say, for every additional 5 seconds it takes to log into a system using two-factor authentication, it's an additional 1,000 hours of an attacker's time it takes to break in. This is one of those, you know, low-hanging fruit where we can get a real bump in terms of our ability to manage our risk and therefore reduce our enterprise risk or our financial risk.
Okay, fantastic. You appear to have really addressed how connecting cyber security to business risk and articulating it into business losses is a barrier sometimes to convincing an organization of the need. I find it interesting when you interpret it down to the number of hours it takes in cybersecurity practice and the amount of money it costs, that it's more effective. We are now going to take another station break for our sponsor, and we will return.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
Okay, Nate, I'm back, Dr. Wanda Tisby-Kuzar. I would like you to elaborate on some topics. Is there a particular certification or area of expertise that one that's doing the type of business that you're doing that is specialized would need?
I'll differentiate again between our business, which is about cyber executive protection, and the sort of broader cybersecurity community.
Okay,
I tend to be a bit of a controversial detractor when it comes to cybersecurity certificates. Okay. I think that you have a very well articulated set of skills necessary and differentiated roles within the cybersecurity organization of an enterprise. You have cybersecurity engineers, you have cybersecurity architects, you have developers who need cybersecurity skills and expertise, you have integrators, you've got cybersecurity policy professionals. The challenge that I see actually in a lot of organizations, coming back to the point we were discussing earlier about risk management, is that too often when hiring senior level cybersecurity professionals, organizations look for someone who can do everything, who can write firewall rules and code analyze code for cybersecurity vulnerabilities while simultaneously being a strategic thinker and a leader and a manager. I think the most effective organizations have focused on hiring business leaders who are also cybersecurity professionals to run their cybersecurity organization, allowing them to hire and build the best organizations under them. But also, and I think this is the most important point, when you put a business leader in the role of a cybersecurity, when you put a business leader who is a cybersecurity professional in the role of leading your cybersecurity organization, you've got someone who can talk to the business about adoption of cybersecurity practices. And that's really the critical question. Cybersecurity, just like any other support function within the organization, is only as effective as its adoption across the enterprise. So being able to talk to the heads of lines of business, and to your board of directors and to your executive leadership team, and getting behavioral changes, both from those organizations and those individuals, requires someone who understands the business. And that's not something you can do if your career has been entirely in the engineering side.
Mm. Okay, I find that to be very interesting. Another challenge that someone in your industry is faced with. Can you tell me, and I'm targeting right now, the business ethic approach. What are some characteristics that you would think someone who is looking to get into the type of industry that you're in should possess?
Well, so I think that's a great question. And it really, in my mind, connects to the question of that I was talking about a minute ago about certificates, right? So, or certifications. Part of the reason I don't think certifications are all that valuable is because they're generally granted based on a body of knowledge that someone can cram for, and it doesn't require a specialized skill set, but just the ability to memorize a lot of information and regurgitate it on an exam. I think in the real world, if you want to be a cybersecurity professional, there are a number of paths you can take. But if your interest lies in engineering, integration, technology, forensics, I would strongly encourage you to look at cybersecurity engineering programs or other engineering programs that give you the strong base of problem solving and engineering expertise, whether that's computer science, electrical engineering, some of the MIS programs, any of the core engineering skills are quite essential when it comes to building a base of knowledge from which you can specialize. And then from there, you can worry about, are you going to be a forensic investigator? Are you going to be a SOC analyst? Are you going to be, you know, someone who builds security tools? There's infinite possibilities on the technical side. I found that a lot of the engineering expertise transfers quite well. If your interest is in policy, going and getting an engineering degree is probably the best set of skills and experiences you can have to become a policymaker as well. So I would encourage people to develop a broad base of technical skills, and then from there specialize.
Okay. Can you describe some of the benefits of serving your particular market niche?
The benefits to our customers?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So, I would say it's kind of twofold. For us, our customers really look at increased protection, and that's security and privacy protection, and the peace of mind that comes along with that. But almost, or perhaps in some cases even more valuable, is the peace of mind of knowing that they have someone to call. So if you talk to a high net worth individual, an executive or a celebrity, and you say, who's responsible for helping you if you have a problem? The answer is almost universally, I don't really know. Or I've got a guy, but he's kind of an IT guy. Mm-hmm. He's not really a security guy. And that answer scares people. They get nervous about it. What our focus is on taking all of the responsibilities of being protected off their plate. And we really think this should be the long-term trend. What I was saying before about how we've done a disservice to individuals as a cybersecurity community by not providing the kinds of tools and technologies and support that individuals need in their personal lives, we've also created this weird dynamic where we tend to blame the victim. Mm. Oh, you've got ransomware? I can't believe you weren't backing up. You should just be able to restore from your backup. What do you mean you weren't backing up your system? right? Why do we expect that individuals will behave the way we would as cybersecurity professionals? They've got day jobs, right? They do other things with their time and energy in their lives. This is what we do for a living. So we should do it for them. So we should have a mechanism to be able to say, don't worry, cybersecurity is something you don't have to think about. It's taken care of for you.
Excellent. Do you mind responding to what employment experiences you have had personally that has shaped your business's core values?
Sure. So I've worked in and out of government. I spent my entire career in the security world. I'm an electrical engineer by training. So I've worked at varying levels of the sort of levels of abstraction within the government and in private industry. But I would say the kind of couple of core things that shape our business values focus on, in my experiences, in both leading large organizations, like the Cybersecurity National Lab that I led at NIST. And NIST is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, for those who aren't familiar. And I tend to also be a geek about management philosophy. So I read a lot of books about how to help instill and inspire people to be their best selves. And I'll say, you know, one thing that I think sets the tone within our organization is something that I do on every interview, which is to ask the person I'm interviewing what truly motivates them. And usually it's a two-part question. I will ask what they're really motivated by, and they will respond with some innocuous thing that they think will just not get them in trouble. And then I'll say, okay, no, let's stop for a sec. I'll tell you what truly motivates me, the good and the bad. And I'll be completely candid and honest about it. And I'll share that with them. And then I'll say, what really motivates you? And the answers you get back are fascinating. When people feel confident that they can open up and be honest about what motivates them and not be judged, you hear, I care about getting home at 6 o'clock to have dinner with my kids. You hear, I care about this, you know, going scuba diving for 2 weeks every summer. That's what I care about. I care about how much money I can make. I care. And in an environment where people bring their whole selves to work, and that's not a phrase that I coined, I've stolen that from others, but when people bring their whole selves to work, you find that it's easier to communicate priorities, feedback, to accept feedback, and to drive everyone to be their best and most authentic selves. And that creates a really high functioning team.
Wow, you're speaking my language, Nate. I happen to be a career coach, and you're focusing on the ability to motivate individuals by allowing them to be their authentic self. Is pretty crucial, and I find it interesting in such a technical field that you would have that perspective, and I really applaud you. I find it interesting that you indicated too often when hiring senior cybersecurity people, they want to hire somebody who can do it all, rather someone who is specialized in that area. And I have to agree with you. I have worked with corporations that have that philosophy and mindset, and it often results in mayhem. I don't know if you've seen that in your practice, but I certainly have. And how you address your customer and how you service your customer, I find is worth a lot of applause too. And it was interesting when you said that not providing the person with the tools or making them accountable when they're not the expert, that you want to have a customer that feels that they can trust someone who can take care of them. That speaks to your values of customer service. And on that note, we're going to go ahead and take another break for our sponsors. Okay. We are going to end right now with this review. And I just want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know exactly how they can get in contact with you.
Sure. So please come visit us. We've got quite a bit of information up on our website, and we'd love to have a conversation with potential customers or, of course, anyone in the community who shares a like-minded approach to security. You can find us at www.cypientblack.com, that's C-Y-P-I-E-N-T, black.com, and we look forward to talking with you in the future.
Thank you so much, Nate, and we really appreciate your participating today.
Sure, thank you.
Have a great day.
Great to be here.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.